Hi, everybody. Are you excited? Me too. I've gotten to hang out with Mary and Wyatt all day, and it's been amazing. So welcome. We're so excited that you're here. I am going to give a brief introduction to Mary and Wyatt. Before I do that, I want to say that the tonight's event is free because of all of our sponsors that we've had. Their booths are set up out in the lobby. We are taking donations. All donations go to support trans students at KU. So if you're interested in, right now we can only do a cash donation because the online portal isn't working, but you can see us out in the lobby or meet with us afterwards, and we'd be happy to take your money and give it to support trans students. So thank you all for that. We also have a raffle tickets. We will be announcing the raffle prizes after the show. So once Mary and Wyatt leave the stage, I and somebody else will come up here and we'll announce the raffle prizes. So, all right, should we get started? Woo! Yeah? All right. Wyatt, Pate, what?
We love you.
I love you too. All right. Wyatt Page Hermanson and Mary Lambert share songs and a live discussion of queer identities, mental health, and how shame inhibits us from living full, joyful lives. Lambert is a Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter and four-time platinum-selling artist, best known for her collaboration with Macklemore, Same Love, as well as her own prolific career as a composer, poet, and activist. Both Hermanson and Lambert are diagnosed bipolar and co-host a podcast, The Manic Episodes, in which they have long and often intense discussions about mental health, self-love, queer relationships, fat activism, and sobriety. Not ones to shy away from tough conversations, Hermanson and Lambert have taken on issues like sexual assault and consent, eating disorders, social justice issues, effective political activism, and their relationship to the church as gay Christians. Hermanson, who identifies as non-binary, often talks about their experiences navigating the professional and academic worlds as someone whose gender identity itself is often a point of political contention. Their podcast has been featured on the Tamron Hall Show, ABC's Nightline, and The Advocate. So join me in welcoming them. Thank you.
I like to talk about uncomfortable things because I think shame hides in uncomfortable things. So I cry a lot. I don't, there's tissues out there. Sometimes when I cry, I start to cry harder because I'm crying. I cry because on the internet you can find pictures of Shar Pei puppies that look like rolled up towels. You can find pictures of pigs wearing rain boots. Sometimes I cry when cheese is really good or when I've cut onions, but that's just human or the chemical component of onion, I guess. One time I cried because it was the best fucking sandwich I've ever had. One time I cried because I was at TSA. I could stop, but there's more to the story. But when I was at TSA, there was like, there was a little boy who had a turtle backpack and he looked so lost and scared and confused. And I didn't know whether I wanted to steal his turtle backpack or him, but you can't steal children. It's a felony. I don't want to be known for something like that, but I am I'm in baby crazy mode. I want a baby so bad right now. So everything is making me cry. I cry because shame propels so many of us that we're told it's weak to cry and are made to feel small and sad when we do. I cry when Sarah McLachlan comes onto my TV and tells me about cats and dogs that don't have homes. And we have a 1,100 square foot house. Sarah McLachlan, I can't have more dogs. We have two and they don't get along. Fuck you, Sarah McLachlan. That's what I have to say. Like, is she here? I don't want her to. I cry because Sarah McLachlan is never here. I cry because I say yes when I mean yes now, and no when I mean no. And I get to love you with all of my yes. Lay your head down. Lay your head down. Lay your head down on me. What is the state of your heart? Is it concave? Are you awake? Sometimes I cry when I forget my meds, and then I cry harder because I wonder, am I actually myself, or am I myself on my meds? And is this actually me, the one that's crying that doesn't have their meds? That feels weird and bad. Who am I? I cry because I used to cry alone because I wanted to die. And then I cry harder because your shoulder is so soft. Because the sunset is so beautiful on the Connecticut River. I cry because the moon is out and all the fireflies are winking at me and they want nothing from me. I cry because sometimes my only power feels like tweeting a hashtag, and that feels so vapid and useless. I cry because Twitter sucks now. I cry because Elon Musk is like the worst. Because there are weapons. I cry because one person armed with self-hatred and a gun can kill an entire room of people. But I cry because there's also love and weddings and babies and chocolate cake and chocolate cupcakes and smaller chocolate cake or like cake pops from Starbucks. I cry because I have complicated feelings about Starbucks. There's also love letters and first kisses and second kisses and third kisses and hammocks and kissing in hammocks. I love hammocks. Lay your head down. Lay your head down on me. What is the state of your heart? Is it concave? Are you so much. I think we're gonna do one more song, and then we're just gonna talk about our feelings. And you're gonna get a really fun secret surprise in a second. When it happens, it's gonna blow your mind. So we have someone coming down from. I'm just kidding. It's not funny. Santa's here. I first wrote this song because you know when you're in a place where you could stay, but is it the best choice for you to stay? Is it the best possible thing? And leaping is really scary. And choosing yourself or living your most authentic life is really scary. I remember when I played this song, when I first wrote it for my sister. My sister's trans, and I remember her weeping and saying, "This is how I feel about transitioning. I don't know if I should make everybody uncomfortable with my gender." Is it that important to me? I don't know. Maybe it's not that important. Maybe I shouldn't do it. You know, like maybe it's if I only feel bad 50% of the time and the other percent of the time I can like be okay. What if you just did it? What if you leapt? What if you chose to live your most authentic self?
Watch me. me. I wouldn't have been fine. I wouldn't have been fine. I wouldn't have been
letting me crash this Mary Lambert concert.
I know.
Right?
Wait, sorry. I'm doing a Britney Spears headset moment, and I'm
You look amazing.
Do I look okay?
It's the way
like
you've always been.
I'm supposed to be. This is how I want to be just in the world.
Absolutely. There was only
like,
one.
I want to be on the plane being like, sorry.
There's only one of these, and we're about to fight to the death for it. And Mary won. So here I am.
Is anyone surprised?
Right.
Thank you for being here. Thank you, honey. I feel like I really, like, I didn't... why didn't you get, like, a proper entrance? Oh. Thank you so much, honey.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Actually, I'm going to go out and kind of come back.
Okay, no, yeah, do you want to? No. We were trying something new. I feel like it worked. Okay,
we're busting out a bunch of new stuff for... Well, I love Lawrence, Kansas. I love it here. This is Mary's first visit.
I love it here.
And for like a month, I've been like, you're gonna fucking love it. Like you are, I've built it up so much.
We live here now.
Yes.
That's it, right? I love it here.
Also, KU deserves a lot of credit for having, I think, just like the most surreal, bizarre, eerie chant in all of sports. And so we're like alone in the car. I was like, it goes like this, check it out. And you're like, I was like, this feels really weird doing it just solo.
Is it like a minor third? Like, where are we going with it? Is there harmony? No.
It
sounds like there is some though.
All school spirit should feel haunted the way that feels haunted. And Mary was like, what does rock chalk mean? And I was like, I don't know. And then I Googled it, and I was like, I just read it, and I still don't get it. Something. But yeah. But thank you all so much for having us.
Yeah, this is really special.
It's special, and it's also, we know...
It's a weird time.
It's a weird time. Yeah.
Things are weird.
I feel like every time we were telling Meg backstage that this is our fourth show at a college, and every time we do one of these, it feels like we... have to start with this conversation about like the political climate and how it's getting, you know, significantly worse. And like for queer people, it's getting significantly worse. And I had this thought earlier that when I was growing up, and I wonder if you feel the same way. Well, Mary, I know that you're going to feel the same way because Mary legalized same-sex marriage. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. You're welcome.
Yes. But before Mary did that, I really did feel like my, and this is not to discount the like horrible traumatic experiences that, you know, I know queer people have had in my lifetime, but it felt like progress was happening. Mm-hmm. I felt like the spaces where I felt safe, it felt like those were getting bigger and bigger and wider and wider. Like the world felt safer to me. Mm. And I'm realizing now that for young people and for all of us, but like especially for young people, they're growing up in a world where it feels like the safe places are getting smaller and smaller. And I know that in Kansas, like I'm sure that it's on all of y'all's minds, the thought of like just kind of legislating trans and queer people out of existence feels like the effort, and it's really scary. And and I know that we can't do a whole lot to like all correct that in an evening, but we can at least like come together and assert our right to exist and our refusal to be erased.
Totally.
Right? And I think every time we come together, it's really instrumental in doing that.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I think too, as I've been like, when you look at the legislation, it just feels like they're trying to find all these like really weird little nitpicky things. I'm like, that's not even a thing.
Yeah.
No one's doing that. No one's trying to give gender reassignment surgery to like children. That's not happening. This is a non-issue.
Yeah. Well, and I think the scary part about it too is that you are only forced to have your identity kicked around like a political football if you're in a marginalized group, right? And queer people became politically radical because we were put in a position where we had to be, right?
Yes.
And also, I think, just because we're like fucking cool people and we identify with other forms of oppression. But, you know, the idea that, like, I think it's Peggy McIntosh who talks about, like, the idea of, like, being a queer person is not perceived as being morally neutral. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that that's the case with trans people, too, just want to live their lives. And, you know, and, like, trans children who are coming into their own identities and looking for a voice and a space in the world, they're being treated like a political talking point. And it's because they've been forced to be that. But I mean, I think it's because conservatives don't have any policy ideas. But, you know, whatever it is, it's really nefarious. It's really sick. And
I agree.
No one should be in a position to have to, you know, think about their own life, their own existence that way.
Well, and it's interesting to me, too, the amount of destruction that's there. When I get excited about politics and when I get excited about people that are doing cool shit, I'm like, look at what they're making. Look at what they're creating in this world. And how often do I see these policies where I'm like, this is just desecrating shit. You're just like trying to gut systems. You're trying to gut support. You're trying to hurt people and say that like, that it's not what's happening,
right?
Without thinking about what the end result will be, or this idea that like women can't have autonomy over their bodies, or like it's not healthcare. I'm like, this is healthcare. Like abortion is healthcare. Like these issues are like it's just so, it feels so destructive. And one thing I love about queer people is just like how much we build and like how many beautiful like spaces that feel so like just warm and safe. And like, I was thinking about this, I want to write a poem about this, but like, you know, I want to write this poem that's like talking about snow and how beautiful the snow is and how beautiful each individual snowflake is. And like, yeah, that's fucking, I'm a snowflake. Yeah, I am. I'm fucking beautiful and perfect as I am. And I have good ideas. Like, you know,
I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just so I feel like we always have to couch these visits like that. And
it feels increasingly so, but I know, like I said, having a podcast or having these conversations or like donating to charities or, you know, getting involved in these sort of efforts where we're collaborating with other people, I know that sometimes, especially when you're in this sea of red like Kansas, it can feel really, it can feel impossible and really frustrating, and like you, like there's no way that no matter how much effort or force you put into resisting these kind of efforts, they're inevitable and they're coming. Mm. And I think that's part of the war against, you know, people who, especially queer and trans people, is I think like the fact that we're like empathetic people who don't like fighting, and we don't, you know, like I think that's really part of it.
Yes.
And like we are forced to, from a young age, acknowledge our vulnerabilities and see the good in other people so that we can get up out of bed every day, because otherwise it's fucking impossible. Mm. And so that's a vulnerability, and they prey on that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not an accident now that under the guise of care of protecting children, which is not, it's, that's not the, that's
who,
not what
children.
It is. Right. That's not what it is. That's not it. That under that guise, there's this, you know, like systematic attempt of erasing people who are already vulnerable and don't have the numbers or like the temperament to be awful and hateful and nasty back. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I understand that feeling. Like my heart is with y'all. Like right before we came, I was like, I know I've heard some of what's going on in Kansas, but what's going on in Kansas right now? And as I was looking, because y'all had that, like, you know, fabulous, like, rejection of an abortion ban, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that was fucking huge. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, Kansas. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I looked at everything else that was going on last week, and I'm sure that it feels like one step forward, two steps back, but we're in your corner.
Yeah. And I think, too, like you were saying, I feel like the the hope is that you become exhausted. The hope is that you burn out and then you don't give a shit anymore. And
yeah.
You're not as engaged as you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where community comes into play. And that's why taking care of our mental health is so important and really doing that sort of maintenance to be like, I have to step back from certain things sometimes because I want to be able to come totally full, ready to engage and ready to show up in a way that is right for me and my experience
yeah.
and what my strengths are. And if I do that when I am exhausted or I'm on autopilot or I'm doing it out of fear because I'm scared of fucking up, then I'm not going to be going forward with the best kind of energy I possibly
yeah.
can. Changing my mindset from making activism almost a compulsory thing out of fear because I don't want to disappoint people or I don't want to, you know, I want to be the, I don't want to fuck up or say something
yeah.
wrong. And moving into what is joyful about this? What can I create in this? What kind of world can we imagine
yeah.
together as a community in that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think so. But I mean, but in order to do that, right, I feel like you're in the sphere of impossibility because
yeah.
you're having to maintain your own sanity with many systems that are not supportive of that when so many of us, especially in marginalized identities, are constantly at a threat of just our existence. So how do you show up and how can you actually, you know, wake up and feel motivated
yeah.
to do the dishes. Like, it seems so fucking trivial to do, like, really basic things. But, I mean, I think when I work through my own shit, I feel like I'm able to come in a much more positive way.
Yes.
But that requires honesty, and that requires a lot of vulnerability to say, like, what can I actually do
yes,
right now?
Yeah.
Maybe I can't show up in the way that I want to, but maybe with enough support and maybe with really being able to be compassionate to my own experience and what my own needs are,
mm-hmm.
maybe I can offer that,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
like once I get those needs met.
I'm not, what you're saying is not funny.
I'm laugh, you jerk.
No. Laughing because I'm real, like, as you're talking, I'm realizing, like, I think, you know, our podcast is primarily about being queer, about being neurodivergent. For Mary, it's about being fat. We, you know, I think it's really hard to imagine, like, when we talk to people about our podcast, they're kind of like, oh, okay. I'm like, no, but it's really fun. Like, we're both bipolar, but you know, that means that sometimes we're both manic, so it's really actually a thrill. But I always think about what you said one time, which is you're like, the opposite of living in fear, the opposite of shame is vulnerability, mm-hmm. is connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the possibility that we have to be vulnerable and connect with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it doesn't have to come in any particular package, right?
Exactly. Well, and I think too, when we talk about trauma, like, you know, I did my poetry workshop today and I was really thinking about like how we engage with trauma and how we communicate about our own trauma. And I find myself when I'm discussing, you know, traumatic events very explicitly, I find myself trying to make it the most packaged, digestible thing that makes sense to other people. Because trauma is complicated. It's complex. It's like, it's not cut and dry. Everybody's experience is so different. And like, it can be a dynamic. It can be an event. It can be, there's so many different ways that trauma shows
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
And
so
we
fun.
Want to be understood. That's my deepest need is like, I need to be understood. I need you to love me. And the best, easiest way that we're taught that and instructed that growing up is to make yourself fit into a category that makes sense to other people and to make your issues make sense to other people. So we distill it down. And I think when we do that, we lose the ability to love all of our complicated complexness. And that, what a tragedy that is. And I think when I met you, I was so excited because I'm like, you're fucking weird too. Like you're really messed up. Yeah, cool.
Hell yeah. That was a really weird response.
I'm just, and I'm... I'm just very grateful to have found you. And I do want to share a song. This would be a good time for a song about, like, it's hard to get out of bed sometimes.
Mm-hmm. You do your best, and we all do our best. And what I try to say too is, like, there's gonna be a really fun song later, and this isn't that one. So we got some tissues out there.
You gotta take your medicine before you get the sugar or something. I don't know. There's an adage somewhere about that.
But part of my struggle with writing this song took me 5 years to write. Part of my struggle with writing this second verse and working through this song was that I didn't know how to communicate my own struggles, because my bipolar disorder looks different than other people's bipolar disorder. My trauma looks different than other people's trauma. And I want to be relatable. I want you to relate so hard to me that you love me forever. And I need your applause and adoration all the time. It's very important to me.
Ask and you shall receive.
This feels manipulative. I didn't mean to. I was like, clap or I'll cry. No. That's a new shirt. I think
good idea.
I think it was really difficult for me to get to this place where it was like, I am just gonna say what it is, and I'm gonna say how it feels for me, and if it resonates with someone else, then that's great. But I think we have this tendency when we're hurting to say, I'm gonna beat you to the punch. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna name this really awful thing. I'm gonna name how bad I am before you do, and then that will be great, and then you will love me.
Yeah, you can inoculate yourself against other people's
totally.
Thoughts and words. Yeah,
but you can't always do that. But this is a song sort of reconciling that.
One, two, three, four. Can't find a reason to get out of bed, but you're lying next to me. It's not your fault. One, two, earthquake. Does anybody know the way out of here? I planted roses in the backyard. Don't remember why. And shame is an ocean I swim across, across, across. You can't break me if I've already done it myself. You can't shame I've already done it myself. You can't drown me if I've already done it myself. And I wanna come alive. I wanna come alive. One, two, dark room. All of the people inside my brain are divided and fighting, say get over it. One, two, four, get a language of memories, the nouns, the hurt. I'm not a person, a place, or a thing. And shame is an ocean I swim across, across, across. You can't break me if I've already done it myself. You can't shame me if I've already done it myself. You can't drown if I've already done it myself. And I wanna come alive. I wanna come alive. I wanna come alive. I wanna come alive. if I've already done it myself. You can shame me if I've already done it myself. You can drown me if I've already done it myself. But I'm gonna come alive. I wanna come.
So pretty, honey. That sounded really nice.
You did good. You did good, kid.
You did good. Okay.
You, this singing thing, I feel like, might work out for you. I really can't ever get over the fact that through some weird twist of fate, when Mary was, like, her ascendance to popularity, like, when her music career began, I was getting my PhD and had just zero knowledge of the outside world at all. Like, I had no pop knowledge of pop culture. I, like, lived in the library. It was miserable. Like, I somehow, like, missed the Mary Lambert era, which is wild to me because it's right up my alley. Like, gay, sad stuff. And, like, I vaguely remembered the Grammys performance, but we met on Tinder. And, yeah, and I was late, later than Mary, which is
huge.
Incredible.
I've never met anybody later than me. I was 15 minutes late.
You waited a long time.
I did. I was like, oh, I love this. I mean, I know this sounds, I'm not self-flagellating or anything. I just, like, I like it when people are late because it gives me permission to, like, just be my, like... to just lose track of time. You know?
I'm so glad you felt that way.
I mean, because it could have been
something I've screwed up real bad. But so I walked into this bar and I was like, I'm so sorry to do this. Can you like wave? I'm not sure where you are because I didn't recognize. I feel so bad. I can't believe that you were okay.
I was like, okay, sure. I'm over here.
And thought I was stalking her.
I thought why it was stalking me because it was like everything they said was like, I know, I'm sure you're bipolar. Everybody tells me they're bipolar. No, I mean, no offense. I just, like, you know, I'm like, I'm used to people coming up to me in the grocery store and telling me about, like, their trauma or their mental illness. I'm like,
and you were so, like, you were so, well, because blasé about it. I was like, you're like, I'm bipolar. I was like, no shit, me too. I was like, what meds are you on? She's like, I don't know, Lamotrigine. What are you doing? Like, what are we talking about?
Or when I called you, you were like, oh my God, you have a Washington State number. And I was like, yeah, I'm from Seattle. You know
and
that.
You knew
and
that.
You know that, honey.
So you must have just thought I was playing it real cool.
I really did. That, and so everything we discussed, I was like, oh, me too, me too, me too. And then by the time you came over to my house, and I was like, I told my roommate, I was like, either this person is... like absolutely my soulmate or they're stalking me and I'm very scared. And she's like, why did you bring them to the house? I was like, I'm taking a risk, man. I'm like,
actually, yeah, that was like day two.
I know.
That was
my thought. I think we're unpacking all of this right now. This is not part of the, my thought was we could just have a little fun.
Okay. Yeah,
we're
right.
Gonna have a little fun. And, like, you know, like, I don't care. I could, you know, this, I don't care.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, sure. Right.
We couldn't do anything serious, though.
Right, yeah, of course not.
And then there was, we almost tied at Scrabble, which is a big deal because I'm a Scrabble champion. I played competitive online Scrabble for many years, and I was top 1,100 in the world for 1 week.
And she's also Taurus, very, very competitive.
I win everything.
Yes.
It's important to me to win. And be the best. Mm-hmm. And then you looked at my books and we had all, like, almost all the same books. And I was like,
we had a lot of the same books. And then that just confirmed for you that I was stalking you. So Mary pulls me out. She's like, can we go outside? I just want to talk for a second. So we go outside and she's like, if you know who I am, like, it's okay. Like, I've dated fans before. Like, it's fine. And I was like,
I went on a date with somebody.
What you told me. That's,
I just it's important to me.
And so I was like, if it makes you feel any better, I'm not stalking you, I swear, but if it makes you feel any better, I'm convinced that, like, I've finally snapped and, like, this is actually a hallucination. So that's where I am in my mental health journey right now, if that's making you feel any better. And so, like, I would tell my family members, I'm like, so I'm dating this, I went on a date with this woman, and, like, I kind of talk a little bit about what she did in her career, and they'd be like, did you go on a date with Mary Lambert? And I'm like, how does everybody know this but me? But I'm convinced it had to be that way because otherwise I would have acted real weird around you. I'm convinced. But anyway, I'm bring this up because the idea that I get to, like, perform music with Mary at all is just so bananas to me. It's just so bonkers. And that, you know, she trusts me to allow me to participate in these shows because it's such a vulnerable experience for her. It's every time it's really amazing.
I'm like, are you kidding me with your voice and you and who you are?
You.
This is awesome. This is,
thank
you're
you.
So, you're so good. You're so talented.
We're just going to do this all night. Thank you. Well, I mean, I proposed to you during one of these shows, so this is a high bar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm like, do it again. Do it again. And again.
There's no limit.
I think one thing that we really bonded over was our ability to be vulnerable. And I think our reticence to shame.
Yeah.
And, like, shame had been present in so much of our lives in so many different ways. And I think when we first met, it was like, oh, this is the big one. You're the big one. This is the love. This is my soulmate. So, and I felt like I'm not ready. I'm not a good person. I'm not a good person. I don't think I'm good. I don't think I deserve you. I don't think I'm worthy. I don't think I'm. I don't think I'm ready for a love this great to be the kind of person that you deserve. And I think what was so powerful is we had been dating for about 3 months, and I was dealing with some of my own issues. A lot of the issues I have are, like, letting go of the past and, like, being able to, like, move on and feel worthy. And I remember coming to you saying, I think I'm still in trauma brain. Like, I feel like I'm not making decisions that are fair to you or even fair to myself. And I'm just so sorry. I feel like I'm really going to fuck this up. And you were just like, there are so many ways that we could both fuck this up. And I could mess it up as just as much as you could. And we make a decision here that we're going to figure it out together.
Yeah. And we had both been in relationships where we thought, on the podcast, we call non-neurodivergent people cis-brained. It doesn't make any sense. Just roll with it. It doesn't make any. It's so stupid.
I call them depoled. When you're not bipolar, you're just depole, you know?
You don't have any poles? Dang, that sounds boring as hell, man.
You don't oscillate?
Yeah.
Oscillate? I don't know.
But yeah, I think, like, Jesus, we both, I think, came from these backgrounds with romantic relationships where you're like, there has to be at least one cis-brained person in the relationship, right? You can't both be neurodivergent. Like, you can't both have bipolar disorder. How is that going to work? Like, that's just a recipe for disaster. And, like, I remember thinking that to myself and having a few conversations with my friends who were like, I don't know, how do you feel about that, right? They didn't come outright and say, oh, I think that's a really bad idea, Wyatt. But they were like, how do you feel about it? How do you feel when you're with her? And I was like, I feel like I don't have to explain or apologize for anything. I feel like on those days where I can't bring myself to get out of bed, or I can't stop crying and there's nothing specifically wrong. I'm just crying and everything feels really gray and I can't imagine a way out of it. I don't have to explain that or justify it or act like everything is fine. You know, I had so much shame around the fact that, you know, when we met, for example, like, I was really in the throes, I think, of pretty bad, like, alcohol use disorder. Like, I had a really unhealthy relationship with alcohol. Within the first few months of us being together, I was hospitalized twice, like had to, you know, go to the emergency room with alcohol poisoning. And I was just really in it. I was drinking a lot and just, you know, like pulverizing my own brain, you know, my poor bipolar brain, that the last thing it needed was alcohol. And I was like, here's some more alcohol, you know? And Mary kept coming back. Like I thought, this is what I do that drives people away. This is why I'm going to end up alone. And she was there, you know, every time I would fuck up or be not my best self or, you know, end up, you know, drinking too much and miserable. It's like she was there. And yet I knew, this is so hard to explain, I knew that she wouldn't be with me to her own detriment, right? Like I knew that she wanted us to like find a way out of this shit together. She didn't want to be, she wasn't going to be okay with being dragged down by me. I know that might sound a little bit strange, but we were both going through our own stuff. And I think having that experience with neurodivergence and with being on meds and like with, you know, with, well, we forgot to give trigger warnings, but you know, suicide attempts and like we'd really been in it together. Mm-hmm. And I think so much differently now about like what support looks like. Mm-hmm. I used to think there has to be somebody at the helm who's normal, right? And I don't believe that anymore. I think there's so much like community building that can happen with people who struggle with their mental health. Yeah. And I mean, I tell my students, I've started telling them like damn near the first day of class, like, just so you know, this is what I experience. And then that opens up everybody else to feel comfortable sharing with me on their own time or, you know, like letting me know what resources they might need. So yeah. Doing it
so
together.
So beautiful, honey. Thank you for sharing. I didn't know you were going to share that. Oh, that's really beautiful.
Sweetheart. Well,
I guess I knew I was going to cry. I always do.
You knew.
I just didn't know.
She cries a lot.
We don't usually like fully discuss what we're going to talk about. We kind of roundabout, and you were like, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to talk. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Because I like to get the genuine reaction. You know
yeah.
what I mean? I got to keep you on your toes.
Yeah.
Like, we're married now, you know?
But I think... For me, we had both been with people, I think, that were, like, we felt represented the being grounded and being cisprained. And I think when I met you, I was like, this could be the best thing, or this could be really bad. Like, this could be really, like, this could burn in our faces, like, be really dangerous. And I think everyone in our lives was a little worried,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Especially because we were like, okay, well, we won't see you for 6 months because we're just, like, we're just in a lover's hole, you know? Like, I think, nope, don't do that. Don't say that. And I think, like, a hovel. I think what I mean is that it just felt so, I felt so validated in my cuckoo-ness.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like you saw my cuckoo-ness and you were like, and I raise you alcohol use.
Didn't you say once that there's a comedian that you liked who said relationships are tiny cults?
Yes, Sam Sachs said that.
So we are in a tiny, we have a tiny
this
cult.
This is a tiny cult.
So I think
welcome.
Like we have to... Those of us who are able to, I think it's really important to be conscious of like, I can take this dynamic that we've created and, you know, I can take the same philosophy, like I said, that being open and finding those connections can help everyone. It makes everybody's lives easier. It can make the day-to-day so much easier. And I've tried to, like, I'm conscious of this being on a college campus. Spaces, this place was not built for people who are neurodivergent. It just was not. In fact, it was designed to weed out people who are neurodivergent and prevent them from succeeding. Mm-hmm. That's the whole history of, like, you know, American universities were built off of the sort of like German research institution model, where it was like a really acrimonious, tense relationship between you and the professor, and he was basically like fighting you, like, fuck you, you'll never make it through my class, and you're like, yes, I will, and like, maybe you make it, maybe you don't, and you're white and Christian and male, these spaces were, yeah, like, the SAT was developed by one of the same people who helped to develop the IQ test, which is also bullshit, and the only thing the SAT was ever designed to predict was how well you'll do your freshman year of college, and it happens to do a really bad job of that, and so that was one of the mechanisms by which it was designed to just filter anybody who thinks differently out, right? So just by being here, This is an act of real defiance. You are, we're creating a new cult here. Yes, like, yes. Yeah. And so it won't be easy for you, and you might have to be really creative and find other people who, you know, who experience the same sort of struggles you do. But I keep thinking of it. I'm like, we have to form our little tiny cults. We have to be like, I see you. I see what you've gone through, and we can make this together.
Yes.
And in fact, this next song we're doing, I remember you telling me when we first met, you had just recorded this.
Yes.
And you're like, as a bipolar person, I think you're really going to appreciate this one. And then you started singing and I was like, yeah, I do. So it's, maybe y'all will appreciate too.
It was, I my sister, who I am very close with, we lived in the same apartment building because we're all, I guess we're in a tiny cult, too. My sister loves my music, but she's always like, Mary, it's just so sad. Like everything is just so sad. Can you do like an upbeat? Can you write an upbeat song? And I was like, yeah, of course I can. I can write an upbeat song. So I wrote this upbeat song and then I was like kind of sitting with myself and I was like, it's too happy. It's too, I feel like it needs like really sad lyrics. So here you go. So this is a pop song called Born Sad. And you're welcome so much.
Keeping my head above water is all that I know how to do. But it's kind of beautiful. Since I was a child, was always a sad one. And why you gotta cry all the time, all the time? Keeping my head above water is all that I can do. Did anybody ever teach you? Some people are born sad. Am I just born sad, born sad? To my chest, asking the pages, will anybody anywhere ever love me back? I got some secrets to keep creeping out in my sleep, asking my good God, will they ever go away? Am I just born sad, born sad?
Little ditty.
Just a fun pop song.
I really like how that song doesn't like there's like a kind of like acceptance to it, right? Yes. Like there's something about that I really like. It's not, it's refusing to give you like a silver lining. I kind of like that.
Yeah, I feel like for so long I felt just deep shame that I didn't see the world the way other people did, and that I just really, I did not have a sense of belonging. I was raised in an abusive environment. I was raised bipolar. I was raised Pentecostal, and I did not belong anywhere. I didn't belong at home. I didn't belong with my parents. I didn't belong at school, and I didn't belong at church. And there was nowhere left for me that I felt safe or that I deserved to exist. And when I think about other people that feel the same way, mm-hmm. it breaks my fucking heart. Mm-hmm. Of course I was sad. Of course I grew up sad. And I think what happens, and I noticed this too with diet culture stuff, is that like when we have this desire to really pathologize everything. When I think, I used to make myself crazy going like, why am I gay? Like maybe, like would I actually be gay if I hadn't been, you know, like assaulted? Like would I have been gay? Like am I broken? Is queerness like as a result of like some fucked up shit? Like no, absolutely not. You'll never know. You can't know. And like it's cruel to think that it arises out of trauma. It is so cruel. And when I thought about how I relate to my like bipolar disorder as well, I'm like, maybe I wouldn't have bipolar disorder if I hadn't experienced as much trauma. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You won't know. So to make yourself like crazy to understand why is sometimes it's a fool's errand. It doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And I'm too much of a hedonist to sit in that. I'm like, no, I would rather like not do that. There's no reason. I'm not going to find a right answer for it. And I found myself doing the same thing with body stuff, with being like, people are fat for as many reasons as people are thin. Mm-hmm. If I go and try to retrace my steps of like, what did I do wrong to get a body like this? Like, fuck that. Like, no, I have a good body. There's nothing wrong with about my body. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't.
Amen.
Like, I need to be eating, I have to eat food to like live in this world, and food is so good. And like, to like, the idea that I would restrict that because I still haven't gotten like a compelling like argument for it, for like restricting food, doesn't really make sense to me. So for me, I'm like, I want to be in a place with myself where my identity is not, where I'm not perceiving any part of my identity as something that has arisen out of trauma.
Yeah.
I don't want to look in the mirror and say, well, I'm fat because of trauma, because I can't stop eating, because it makes me so sad, because I'm sad, and that's why I eat. And like, no, I'm, that is not why. It's like, there are so many reasons that I could have this body that for me to respond to the world with joy is like the best possible thing. Once I did that, I started taking so much better care of myself. Mm-hmm. When I stopped trying to take diet pills or like starving myself or compulsively working out or being obsessive about food, when I gave myself permission to have a brownie, I felt freer and I didn't feel panic eating the brownie. I didn't feel like I had to eat 5 brownies. I felt like I could just enjoy the fucking brownie, which you should. You should just enjoy the brownie.
And also, as an observer, it freaks people out when you're happy, and that's always fun. Yeah. They're like, wait a second, I don't get this. So, like, Mary, spoiler alert, we got married in October, and Mary was on an episode, it hasn't aired yet, but an episode of Say Yes to the Dress. And I know. Like, holy shit. Y'all want to watch it together? Watch party. Oh, y'all going to have a watch party.
I don't know when it's going to air. I'm like, we just talked about this on the last episode of the pod, which is like, every year there's like some really cool thing that I do. And then like, I sign a contract for it and they're like, actually, we're not going to use it. And I'm just like, please don't let it happen to this. Cause like I told so many people that I'm on it and I don't want to do it again.
Like I don't know if you're like contractually not allowed to say, I'm allowed to say it. Fuck it. But like that song, it's amazing song for the High School Musical sequel. And then they were like, oh, sorry. And she recorded this incredible song, like went to LA, like did the songwriting. I'm sorry, you cover your ears. Duo. And I was like, this song is a fucking banger. Like, it is so good. And then they're like, we ended up changing the plot a little bit, so the song doesn't really fit in with the story
anymore. And I was like, that's so cool. Totally fine. And there's no other use for it, but I had a good time.
On another dimension, I feel like that song came out, and it was fucking awesome. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but sorry.
I brought that up.
But I remember, like, the comment that you said that you made to your shopper while you were saying yes to the dress, yeah.
Well, and who knows? Did I? No, I did. I'm sorry. Spoiler alert. But I remember part of the reason I wanted to go on the show was because as a lover of fashion and weddings and love and crying, I felt like this would be the perfect avenue to really talk about body stuff. Every episode it's a pretty frequent discussion of weight loss and, you know, making sure you get that right body for gets your man, you know. Make your waist is...
They're like, we don't have to say anything. Your body, your man, you know?
Yep.
You gotta do it.
So I felt like, I don't know if my politics and my relationship to my body, like this, my radical activism is really going to be accepted here. But I think, well, first of all, I don't think it's radical. I think it's just like neutral, like just like being weight neutral. It shouldn't be radical. It's just like, it's just a thing. It's just another part of your body. But I remember trying this dress on and I turned around in the mirror. I was like, oh my God, my back rolls look so cute in it. And I really meant it. Like, I have a really nice, good fondness for my back rolls. And the producer was like, in the 20 seasons, I don't think we've ever had anybody say anything like that. And I was like, that sucks. That sucks. You haven't had anybody say that. That's sad. That's a problem. There's a problem. There's a problem with the culture. If people look at their body and they're resentful of it and they want less of themselves and they don't, and they feel that there's something wrong with their body all the time, No, no. And I remember, as you know, because you're also super fat positive and body positive. And I remember when we first started just discussing body stuff, you were like, I didn't realize that I was like sucking in at home, or if I walked by the mirror, I'd make sure that I was sucking in and not even realizing that you were doing it. And I feel like so much of what we believe to be true about fatness and about bodies are so ingrained that we don't interrogate it. And I think it's a tragedy, because when we interrogate, we get to be more honest with ourselves and our own experiences. And we get to hold other people. No, you can't say that to me. No, I don't believe that. No, I don't think I should restrict that.
Yeah.
No, I want to move my body in this specific way. I don't think a treadmill is fun. I'd rather be out in nature. Or no, I need to rest. Mm-hmm. It's important for me to rest right now. I'm going to give myself permission to do that so I can show up and do great work. Mm-hmm. That's important to me. I value that. And when you think about all of the mechanisms, everything that comes into play for why we're obsessed with that. I don't like, fuck patriarchy. Be in this position where I'm constantly thinking about weight loss for what? So like, straight white guys want to fuck me? No, I don't care. I don't give a shit about that. I want to live my best life and do great work. I want to be excited. And I want to change people's lives, and I want to be like stoked about it. And I want to get enough sleep. And I want to find a way that feels good for my body to move in this world. Not that's like some sort of compulsory thing. I remember like going to the gym and being like, I guess I don't have to go on the treadmill. I guess I don't have to lose. I could just go here and lift weights and get strong. Like, that's crazy to me. Mm-hmm, yeah. And like giving myself permission to do that. Oh, wow, that was really fun.
Yes.
Just talking.
Yes.
I should probably do a song.
I think you should.
I think it's fine. I wrote a song, a song poem when I was 19, when I saw all of my friends engaging in the same kind of behaviors, the same sort of self-destructive, like, relationship to self-worth and value, and feeling like,
wow, I think I'm literally just living, just hoping that someone will like me. And I don't want my entire existence to be contingent upon someone else's attraction to me, because there might be a time where no one's attracted to me and I have to be okay with myself as I am. And so that's where this poem sort of came from. I'm here. And I will be here with you. And thank you for letting me be vulnerable and letting us share. And this has already been so special. Okay. Body love. Girls who are trying to fit into the social norm. I know girls who are low rise, MAC eyeshadow, and binge drinking. I know girls that wonder if they're disaster and sexy enough to fit in. Playing Russian roulette with death, it's never easy to accept that our bodies are fallible and flawed. But when do we draw the line? When the knife hits the skin, is that the same thing as purging, because we're so obsessed with death? Some women just have more guts than others. The funny thing is, women like us don't shoot. We swallow pills, still wanting to be beautiful at the morgue, still proceeding to put on makeup, still hoping that the mortician finds us fuckable and attractive. We might as well be buried with our shoes and handbags and scarves. Girls, we flirt with death every time we etch a new tally mark into our skin. I know how to split my wrist to reveal a battlefield too, but the time has come for us to reclaim our bodies. Our bodies deserve more than to be war-torn and collateral, offering this fuckdom as a pathetic means to say, I only know how to exist when I am wanted. Girls like us are hardly ever wanted, you know. We're used up and sad and drunk and perpetually waiting by the phone for someone to pick up and tell us that we did good. Well, you did good. I know I am because I said I am. I know I am because I said I am. I know I am because I said I am. My body is home. My body is my own. My body. Body's my own. Try this. Take your hands over your bumpy love body naked. Remember the first time you touched someone with the sole purpose of learning all of them. Touch them because the light was pretty on them, and the dust and the sunlight danced the way your heart did. Touch yourself with a purpose. Your body is the most beautiful royal. Fathers and uncles are not claiming your knife anymore, are not your razor. Put the sharpness back. Lay your hands flat and feel the surface of scarred skin. I once touched a tree with charred limbs. The stump was still breathing, but the tops were just ashy remains. I wonder what it's like to come back from that, because sometimes I feel forest fires erupting from my wrists and the smoke signals sent out of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I know I am because I said I am. I know I am because I said I am. I know I am because I said I am. My body. My body's my own. My body's home. My body's my own. Home.
Love your body the way your mother loved your baby feet. And brother, arm wrapping shoulders, remember this is important. You are worth more than who you fuck. You are worth more than a waistline. You are worth more than beer bottles displayed like drunken artifacts. You are worth more than any naked body could proclaim in the shadows. More than a man's whim or your father's mistake. You are no less valuable as a size 16 than a size 4. You are no less valuable as a 32A than a 36C. Your sexiness is defined by concentric circles within your wood. It's wisdom. You are a goddamn tree stump with leaves sprouting out, reborn.
Yourself. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah, everybody good?
Everybody in their safe place? Coming home?
We can give them the itinerary for the rest of this journey, you think?
Yeah, we're gonna do
one more song.
One more song. And then we're here to talk to you. This is group therapy now. No, actually, liabilities.
Liability
I can't say
issue
that.
Legally.
That's this issue.
Yeah, no legal.
You didn't sign a waiver.
Yeah, sorry, no legal. So. But we'll do a little Q&A.
Yeah, if you have any questions, we'd love to take your questions. We're going to sing one more song together. Thank you for, I feel you. I know this was a lot to absorb and to feel and to let yourself feel. And I just want to name that that is not your fault. Mm-hmm. You are probably reacting to the conditions and the environment that you have all been taught, that you've been told that there's something fundamentally wrong with you, and there's not. Everybody in this room is exactly as they are supposed to be, and the way that you choose to express yourself and the person you are and the identity that you have is valued, it's important, and you belong here.
Can I say a secret?
Please,
I'm not going to propose to you again, sorry.
Damn it!
There might be more songs after our Q&A or songs.
It's true.
Good. Just don't want anybody to leave.
Thank you, honey. Thank you for catching up. We have two more songs. We needed a break. Math is hard. But also, this is a really good cuddling song. If you're here with somebody that you like or love or really care about, you know, love it up.
Cuddle Although time, motherfucker.
It will never beat this show I did in Florida, which you can't. I mean, who, you know, that's. Just, I mean, that's. There's a reason I haven't toured in Florida in a minute. There was a couple in the front row.
You know where this is going.
It was like, I think I was like playing Body Love or something. And then I saw a flashlight and like the security came and went. And I, like, afterwards I asked my bandmate, I was like, what happened? They're like, oh, they were full on having sex, like in the front row. I was like, aw.
During that song. Jesus.
Okay, I'm probably misremembering. It probably wasn't during Body Love. It was probably something like.
We don't kink shame here.
That's true.
This is a sex positive space. Speaking of that, on the flight here, there's this like teenage boy walking, you know, down the aisle of the plane to his seat, and he had a sweatshirt on that said in old English letters. I think it said sexual something. I don't know what sexual openness or
sexual liberation.
Sexual liberation, and it just said it looked like a family crest, you know. And each quadrant of the family crest just had little stick figures in a different sex position. And Mary and I both like made eye contact with him. We're like,
I was like,
shirt's
love that
cool
shirt.
That and then
shirt rules.
About 5 minutes later, the flight attendant comes up and he's like, sir, excuse me, do you have another shirt? You're going to need to change shirts. And we were like, boo, sexual liberation. You're the problem, man.
I love that you told that story, honey.
She says I smell like safety and home. I named both of her eyes forever and please don't go. I could be a morning sunrise all the time, yeah. And this could be good, this could be good. And I can't change. Even if I wanted to, I can't change. Even if I try, even if I wanted to, my love, my love, my love, my love, she keeps me warm. what's your middle name? Do you hate your job? Do you fall in love too easily? What's your favorite word? Do you like kissing girls? Can I call you baby? Said the people stare, 'cause we look so good together. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I can't change, even if I try, even if I wanted to.
Talk about anything?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah. Yes, please.
How would you go about, you know, advice for an 11-year-old who's non-binary and in a school system where it's not as prominent? We fight tooth and nail.
Oh, God, do you mind if I...
Yeah, please. Yeah. Yeah.
First
please.
Of all, you're awesome.
Yeah.
That is so cool that, like, you are open with your identity in that way is... really, really, really cool. I myself only got the like courage to talk about it with people like last year, and I'm in my early 20s. Just kidding. I'm not. I'm like almost.
I was like, are we doing this?
I'm almost 40. But thank you. Thank you. Actually, I was thinking about ordering a bunch of like, look, I'm 40 stuff just in case there are supply chain issues in a few years, just to prepare. But I'm really glad you asked that, because even I'm in a high school right now teaching. I teach in like a dual enrollment program, so I'm in a public high school, and I struggle even to get other faculty who teach there to use my correct pronouns. And I realize, like, on the college campus, it's so easy. And yet in that space, I have a whole new sympathy for like younger people who have the courage to live openly in a system that does everything it can to other you and silence you. And I think that, you know, anything that you can do to make little pockets of your world feel welcome. Like if there are friends who will use your correct pronouns and see you as you are, which I see you nodding, which is heck yeah, your friends who do that are awesome. Yeah. And like maybe if there are any teachers who respect your identity and make you feel safe, mm-hmm. like gravitate to them. Mm-hmm. Do you know there's that really cheesy, I think it was like Mr. Rogers or something, but he said something like, when something bad happens, like look for the helpers, you know? And I think it's kind of can be helpful to do that. Like there are non-binary students in my class and I'm always like, I've got you, you and me, I got you. We're not going to misgender each other. And if we happen to, you know, like hear somebody giving them guff or not being supportive, I'm like, I've got your back. Like mm-hmm. it's me and you, we're in this together. And, I hope that the world becomes a more welcoming place. I think it's going to because of people like you. And your friends, like they're just going to be more and more and more of you until there are no more people who who don't see it that way. Yeah. But you're awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing. I know that might not have been the best advice.
Honey,
but
that was fantastic advice.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. And as you said, you know, being able to stay vigilant sometimes is a luxury. And we as, you know, when you're in a marginalized identity or especially in an identity where, like, you know, being non-binary or being queer, it's not like you don't always wear it on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we have to be safe any way that we can. And so we sometimes have to make really difficult, uncomfortable, unfair choices.
Yeah.
Because of the conditions that we're in. And that sucks. And it shouldn't happen.
Yep.
But what I try to do is prepare. If I know I'm going to go into a place that's more antagonistic in terms of like with body stuff, if I'm going to go, if I'm going to go into a specific place where I know I'm going to be talking with a lot of people who are really involved with diet culture or really believe in weight loss and, you know, like I know that I'm going to have to prepare myself for that experience. And so I try to set little buffers. Like I'm going to make sure that I talk to my mom after this event I'm doing where I could possibly have a panic attack or something. Mm-hmm. And that giving myself that little bit of comfort and safety is helpful
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Thank you so much for asking that. Yeah, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Yes, it's awesome.
Any other questions? Yeah,
please.
Of that, and it's really frustrating, and I am then again mad at myself for succumbing to that. Is there any advice you have for like that situation?
I totally feel you. And I think because my relationship with my body and fat positivity has been so varied, and I feel like I've been doing like body positive work for like over a decade now and gone through different changes with it. Even like, you know, for only a couple years ago, I was like, what would it be like if I counted calories again just for shits? Not fun. But I think what the worst thing we can do is say that my relationship with my body has to look a certain way and I am failing if I don't engage with it the same way. I think there was a long period of time for me, especially like I love crop tops and I still wear them, but I'm getting more like I also really, really like wearing oversized like stuff that just kind of hangs because it just feels good to relax like that. And I felt pressure like, oh, if I'm doing that, am I hiding? Is this? And then there again is the pathologizing of like, I have to find some sort of reason that it's wrong or I'm doing it wrong or I'm doing fat positivity wrong. When no, this is the style that I want to, you know, have right now. And I feel like when I demonize specific thought patterns or something, like I lose that ability to be compassionate with myself about where I'm at and to recognize. So whenever I slip back into that thought, you know, I went to the doctor for the first time in a year. Everything had been so busy and trying to really come to this place where I'm like, how can I engage with health in a way that is not weight contingent? I have a great doctor who's fat positive and weight neutral. I have all of the, you know, everybody's on my side and I get to engage with movement and food the way I want to. And I still have this feeling sometimes that I'm not doing it right or like that. Do I have this all wrong? Am I like, is this actually really bad? You know, like I could make myself crazy going in that direction. So the more that I can offer compassion for myself about like, where does this shame come from? Where is this shame coming from? Is it coming internally from me, or is this coming from an external, like my fears about how people perceive me? I think the best thing that I've done for my relationship with my body is to remain really curious and to say like, why did I do that? Or what is motivating me in this moment? Can I offer myself compassion for that? Like maybe this one meal that I didn't eat intuitively at this one meal. I thought too much about it, or like whatever it was. Like I was thinking that I needed the right amount of macros or something, or whatever it is. Like being able to let go and move on and move forward, and realizing that that's a product of a system that has taught me that.
I remember you looking at a photo. It was a few years ago. We took a photo together, and you looked at it, and you're like, oh, "That's so weird." And I was like, "What?" And you're like, I don't like how I look in that photo. I don't like how my arms look in that photo. And you were like, it's really interesting. Like I saw you like register it as like, that's something to be curious about. Where the hell did that come from? Mm. And it was a real lesson for me, because I think there are so many aspects of our identity that we can feel that way about. Like I'm thinking even about you sharing your experience with being non-binary. Like there are times when I'm like, you're talking about your sister. There are times when I'm like, is this that important to me? I feel like I'm a burden on everyone. I feel like I'm making everybody police their language, and they seem really, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, I just misgendered you. I'm sorry. I'm just so forgetful. And I'm like, please just don't make it a big deal. Just move on. Like, I'm like, why am I doing this? Does it matter that much? And then I realize like, no, that's such an awful, like, of course it's natural to have thoughts like that and have that shame around it, because it's the whole culture. Like, it's what you breathe and swim in every day. It's like this culture is so fat phobic. I'm privileged enough to say I didn't realize it until Mary and I started dating, and like I learned about fat activism through Mary, but now I'm like, oh my God, it's all so awful. And you just have to sit there and take it all the time, and like every show and every movie and every song that has like fat phobic lyrics, and it's okay to laugh at fat people. And like, it's just, it's everywhere. So to me, it's like, no wonder you're a human. No wonder you're every once in a while, you're like, shit, I'm sliding back. It's because you're being pushed back, you know? Totally. Dang.
Yep.
Sorry not to insert myself really in y'all's conversation.
That was really smart. Hey, cool.
Hey, thanks, man.
Any other questions? We didn't bring our phones, and you took your watch off, so we have no idea like where we're
living
time
wise. I live free of the constraints of time. Are we okay, baby?
It's 8:50.
Oh Lord. Okay, let's play some songs.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, y'all. So. We kept you very late.
Yeah. let's answer one more question.
One more. Okay, yeah. Also,
I just wanted to say that this felt kind of like church.
Oh.
Thank you.
As a kid coming from small town Oklahoma where it wasn't okay, and being in the church, it wasn't okay. This felt good.
Yes. Yes.
In a household where being big was bad, my dad berated on, and he still berates on my weight, and I'm just like, this felt good today.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad. This is God, right? Yeah. We're here. This is God.
Yeah.
This is, community is God. We are God. You know what I mean? Like, we get to show up for each other, and this is love. This is what love feels like.
Yep.
And I'm so glad that we get to have this time with you and do this together. Yeah, right?
Yes.
Well, and I think too, this is my, I feel like so often we get questions where we're talking about like, they're like, how do I get through? I'm like, find the people. Find your people, because the only way that we're going to survive and make it out is if we pass the burden, is if we keep passing it to each other to say, can you hold this for a bit? If I'm fucking exhausted, I can't do it.
Yep.
I have to go to work.
And that's how we can also like show up for people who are in marginalized identities that we don't inhabit. Like
yes.
For when we see people of color being treated like shit, or when we see people with disabilities being treated like shit. Mm-hmm. Like this is, it's what we can do, like to do those little things that we can do to show up for people
100%.
And see. And, but it's like the, you know, I know the oxygen mask metaphor is so stupid. Like on the airplane, you know, you have to fix your own before you can, you know, help somebody else with theirs. But like once we can tend to ourselves and have the freedom to find peace and to heal, then imagine how we can start showing up for other people, like other people who need us.
It will be, it's world changing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm invested in world changing. I want to make it with y'all. Like, I want to do that. I feel like it is so exciting to be around people that want to make the world better and more inclusive and brighter for other people. It is inspiring. Mm-hmm. And I feel like our day, our full day today here, I just feel so inspired. And I know that it can feel like these spaces are increasingly getting smaller, like we started, like, you know, rightfully so, talking about what's going on. But I really feel like when we have moments like this, this can sustain.
Yeah.
You know what I
yeah.
mean? Like, this is sustaining. This is love.
It
this
is.
This is God. This is church. This is special. You
and
know?
If I can end it on a very, this is my, like, I'm increasingly becoming, I think, like the old man I've always meant to be. I spend almost all of my time at home on a recliner now, watching, if I'm not actually bird watching, I'm watching live streams of birds on YouTube. That's where I am right now in my aging journey. And so I'm going to sound like an old man saying this, but even when the faculty at that high school that I work at are pains in the ass, or when like I have to sit through a million meetings in my department, you know, working at a university, I know this sounds cheesy, but I talk all the time with my colleagues where I'm like, younger people are doing such incredible things. Students, like the young people, yes. And like, we were in a department meeting the other day and a colleague of mine said, you know, I'm having a lot of trouble engaging with students since COVID. Like, it's not over, but you know, like, but like since the beginning of the pandemic, they're just different students. It's harder to engage with them. It's, you know, they're not showing up the way they used to. And I'm like, yeah, because there's a whole generation that saw institutions that are supposed to care about people fail people over and over again. And they're watching it now too. They're watching it with state governments. They're watching it with these awful bans and policies and like banning drag. They're seeing this and they're learning from it. And like everybody who is older should be petrified because the world that's coming is one that is more fair and just and inclusive. And I see it in my students' faces every single day. And I just think good things are coming. I really do. Good things are coming down the line.
I love that.
Let's go.
Yes. That's why I'm like, I want to marry you again. Like, you're so cool.
I would.
Do
it
right now.
Yeah.
Do it. Double marriage.
Double marriage.
So we're going to play two more songs for y'all. Thank you so much. Thank you again so much for being here and showing up for us and hanging out with us and
this
being vulnerable.
So good. This is the fucking best. Y'all are the best. This is just so good.
Best college show we've done. I'm just saying.
About my baby, I'm so full of love I can barely eat. There's nothing sweeter than my baby. I never want ones from the cherry tree, 'cause my baby's sweet as can be. She give me toothaches just from kissing me. When my time comes around, lay me gently in the cold dark earth. No grave can hold my body down. I'll crawl home to her. And boys, when my baby found me, I was 3 days on a drunken sin. I woke with her walls around me, nothing in her room but an empty crib. But I was burning up a fever. I didn't care much how long I lived. And I swear I thought I dreamed her. She never asked me once about the wrong I did. When my time comes around, lay me gently in the cold dark earth. No grave can hold my body down. I'll crawl home to her. When my time comes around, lay me gently in the cold dark earth. No grave can hold my body down. I'll crawl home to her. My baby never fret none about what my hands and my body done. If the Lord don't forgive me, I still have my baby and my baby will have me. But I was kissing on my baby, and she put her love down soft and sweet. And in the low lamplight I was free. Heaven and hell were words to me. When my time comes around, lay me gently in the cold dark earth. No grave can hold my body down. I'll crawl home to her. When my time comes around, lay me gently in the cold dark earth. No grave can hold my body down. I'll crawl home to her.
Fun.
Okay. Would you guys sing with us? Would you sing a song with us? Okay, I'm going to teach it to you. And this is really a song. This is why I say, so, well, I heard my friend Andrea Gibson say this once. They were like,
hell yes.
Aren't they so good?
Oh,
they're just so good in so many ways. They said some people go to therapy and some people are performers. And so I really feel like this song has been really helpful for me when I've been performing and I haven't had time to go to therapy or talk to my therapist. So because sometimes, like, if you're a pop singer and you have like a really sunny disposition and you have a problem expressing your anger, and then like, so everything's fine, and then someone just cuts you off, and then you're like, fuck! You know, you get so mad. Like, it just comes out of nowhere. This is a really good song to just like express that in its own sort of way. So, I mean, I don't know about the screaming thing.
Ask the people around you and then
I was in a hardcore band in high school called Where Gods and Vultures Meet. No one knows that. But I screamed. So like, this is like,
this is you. Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Thank you so much. She's a pop singer. Okay, so it goes like this. I don't care if the world knows what my secrets are. Secrets are. So, what? So, what? So, what? So, what? What do you think? Does that sound singable?
I challenge you all to sing louder than Hurdle Driver Nuts.
I'm the star.
No. You're the stars tonight. Don't let her do this. This is megalomania. This is how it begins.
It's true. I'm devolving.
You perform with Madonna once, and this happens, you know? We'll talk about this later.
Do you guys want to hear a Madonna story? I just need to. I feel like we have limited time, but I Madonna. Okay, so
Madge, lover, love her.
Your old friends.
So old friends definitely doesn't email me back. But that's okay. We're cool. So we performed at the Grammys together. We sang Same Love together. We did a duet at the end. And there's this whole thing happening. So Same Love is nominated for Song of the Year that year. And so there was a lot of press stuff we were doing. We had 4 rehearsals with Madonna to make sure we really nailed the performance because we didn't really know what we were doing. We were kind of like making it up as we went along. And when I started, when I started singing my part in the rehearsals, I couldn't stop crying. And it was like, I don't know if any of y'all are singers, but like there's the throat closes up. Like, what are you going to do? You can't sing like this. You just can't. I've been working on it for my whole life. I feel like I've nailed it. It's like in those phrases between, you can really let it go. And then you have to pretend you're not crying. But I couldn't get the words out. So for about 2 rehearsals, they were like, who is this person on stage? Like, is she the singer? I was like, I'm the singer. And Madonna's like, I'm like, no, we're good. Madonna, I can do it. I can do this.
Sit down, Madonna.
And so I felt very like, I really need to be able to show up. I'm really going to do it. And I was able to get a few rehearsals in, but it was the day of the dress rehearsal. And I was like, okay, I'm going to show everybody that on the team and the crew that I can do this and I can sing without crying and then get, you know, I can sound good. So we're in rehearsal, and halfway through the rehearsal, they didn't tell me the couples that were getting married were like coming in as part of the rehearsal. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I have the mic and I'm like, Ben, Madonna, I can't do it. I don't know. And like, so the people are coming in and I'm like, no, this is my time. It's my time. This is my time. It's not your time because I need to sing. And so then I was like, get out of here. You know, I didn't really, but that would have been cool if I did that. But actually what happened is that I did sing and I cried a little bit. And then afterwards, Madonna came over and she was like, oh, sweetie. And she wiped the tears off of my face. And it was just a really tender moment. And I just very sweet. And I haven't washed my face since.
And, and I respect it. And I understand.
I'm disgusting.
Sometimes I feel just for it. Are there any traces?
I'm disgusting.
I'm disgusting.
Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, that was fun. Thanks for story time. I love you so much. Thank you for making today awesome.
You didn't know I was going to do it, too.
Because it's a pop song.
I've got bipolar disorder. My shit's not in order. I'm overweight. I'm always late. I've got too many things to say. I rock mom jeans, cat earrings, extrapolate my feelings. My family is dysfunctional, but we have a good time killing each other. They tell us from the time we're young to hide the things that we don't like about ourselves. Ourselves. I know I'm not the only one who spent so long attempting to be someone else. Well, I'm over it. Woo! I don't care if the world knows what my secrets are. I cry a whole day. I care a lot. Use an analog clock and never know when to stop. And I'm passive aggressive. I'm scared of the dark and the dentist. I love my butt and won't shut up. And I never really grew up. They tell us from the time we're young to hide the things that we don't like about ourselves, inside ourselves.